There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Noise in Brief, PR Week UK's fortnightly podcast series, where we discuss the biggest industry news stories from the past week in a bite-sized format. I'm Siobhan Holt, news editor of PR Week UK, and today I'm joined by reporters Evie Barrett and Eliza Radu. This week, PR Week UK is set to launch the results of its Gen Z survey, offering insight into what younger PR practitioners want from their careers. For those that are a bit unsure, Gen Z is defined, or we're defining it as, PR and comms professionals born between 1997 to 2012. There will be several stories on this over the coming weeks, covering topics such as career satisfaction, working hours, what aspects Generation Z view as important in the workplace, to qualifications, AI and more. But we thought we'd reflect on some of the findings in today's podcast. So Evie and Eliza, what stood out to you from the data?
One of the things that stood out to me was the Gen Z view on AI. So in the survey, 76% of respondents said they were not concerned about AI taking their job. And one of the respondents said, if AI takes my job, it takes everyone's job. And I thought that was quite interesting. In the research, only 3% of respondents said they were actually concerned about AI taking their job. So that's such a small number. So I don't think it's an actual worry on the minds of Gen Z. There was a common consensus that PR is a person-driven industry, and AI doesn't really have the capacity for human thoughts and emotions at the moment. One person likened using AI to customer service or a help desk, which is kind of cold and distant. However, the respondents did say that AI can support them in their creative tasks and admin, saving time and saving money. A few of the respondents also said they joined their AI divisions and teams at work to stay up to date with the latest developments.
So what exactly does that mean?
So there are specific departments that look at AI policy, AI in the creative field, and how AI can help them at work.
Oh, so they're sort of doing more research and being part of that. So that's really interesting.
I've been looking at the kind of hybrid working patterns of Gen Z, so how often they are in the office and how often they'd like to be. And what I found from that is that hybrid working does seem to be here to stay. Young people value both being in the office and working from home. 4% of them currently work remotely, and the same proportion say that this is their ideal setup, which is quite impressive when you consider that that means 96% actively want to be in the office some of the time, at least, even though many of them would have begun working fully remotely in COVID. So there's obviously a desire to go in and learn from people face to face.
Yeah, that is really interesting, considering I think there's sort of a general consensus out there that isn't what Gen Z want, and yeah, that they want to be working from home, that they've got quite used to the COVID setup and that's sort of where they want to be. So that's quite an interesting stat, I think, from the survey.
Mm. They definitely do like working from home as well, though. Only 1% said that they'd ideally like to be in the office 5 days a week, which is quite staggering. 6% currently do that, but I wonder whether maybe it will continue to shift. And I think hybrid working generally is the way forward, just because people see the value of getting to work from home as well. Anecdotally, in the comments, quite a few of the Gen Z respondents said that they go into the office more than their minimum requirement. Others said that they'd like to be in the office more, but feel limited by travel costs and long commute times, which is slightly disappointing. Some of them spoke about subsidised travel and how they'd like that, but one added that they wouldn't want that if it meant that they would be required in the office more rigidly and that they'd be sort of policed more. So I think it's really about flexibility and understanding from employers overall.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, when you've got to think as well with Gen Z, when you're looking at this, that a lot of them maybe don't live in central London because they're central cities because they can't afford it, so they may be living further out. So you can understand why they maybe want some more support with commuting and why working from home is going to be more advantageous to them, because they're going to keep more of their wages, I suppose, is the aim. But I thought it was interesting as well that your comment that the survey seemed to show about the working from home and the balance and the fact it's here to stay, because Richard Edelman obviously said that. He wrote a review on a report that's just come out from Edelman, and that was sort of what he said on the presentation, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the report links quite nicely actually to our research. When I was looking through the comments from our research, it kind of struck me that a lot of young people have really strong opinions about what they'd like to see in the industry, and they're not afraid to voice that. And then in the Edelman survey, they found that 93% of workers think they've been influenced by colleagues in their 20s. So I think, as Richard Edelman said, Gen Z are kind of redefining the workplace at the moment. Edelman's research found that Gen Z and millennials are more keen to debate societal issues in the workplace, and Gen Z is particularly affected by what goes on in the news. So I don't think it's very surprising that they're having such an impact. One thing that I thought was really interesting, actually, was Richard Edelman actually said that a group of his Gen Z staff weren't happy with something he said, so he let them kind of go to lunch with him, and he sat down with them and talked it through as a way of reverse mentoring, which we've obviously seen over here with sort of the Taylor Bennett Foundation scheme and that kind of thing. So that's obviously going to become more important, I think, to kind of listen to what younger people are saying.
Yeah, absolutely. That part did stick out to me in the news story as well, that it was interesting because, yeah, rather than maybe getting offended by the feedback, he actually took it on board, which is maybe a better idea and a better approach if you're a manager, to understand the different angles maybe, and maybe that's how the workplace will improve. But as you say, yeah, it does show that there seems to be this sort of learning from, it's not just learning from your mature peers, it's learning from the younger generation, which is going to make a better workforce overall.
Mm.
Next up, PR Week's launched the latest version of its Top 150 Monthly Trading Tracker, which asks UK agencies from the Top 150 database about trading in the past month. For the August tracker, we asked UK PR agencies about the length of time clients are taking to pay, how many pitches agencies are taking part in, and more. Evie and Eliza, what's the overall mood?
I feel like the industry is looking a little bit optimistic and things are looking better for some agencies. So almost 2/3 of respondents said trading was better. However, almost half of the agencies surveyed said in relation to August that clients on average were taking slightly longer to pay them compared to previous years. Although 10% said that it had been worse, suggesting that although it's good for some, it's not amazing for others. There was also a slight increase in the proportion of agencies that are confident in reaching their four-year targets, up from the previous month. So I think there's like peaks and wanes throughout the industry. Some people are having a better time than others, but holistically, I think people are looking a little bit more optimistic.
But late payments are still a major problem, though, really, aren't they? That's not great to hear that there's a lot significantly saying that that's an issue for them, especially in the light of what we've experienced with Talker Taylor, forced to close part because of late payments from clients. It causes a cash flow problem, especially for the smaller agencies. They haven't got as much leeway. And I know we published an op-ed recently, which was with Sharon Flaherty, who's chief executive at Folk, because she wrote about, well, she argued that late payments bad for any company's brand, reputation and relationships as a whole, and that the industry and PR companies, big or small, need to get tough and refuse to accept late payments.
I feel like late payments are a little embarrassing. I feel like you should be able to pay the people you've hired on time. Otherwise, it just looks bad for you, realistically.
Yeah, it does. And I think as well, PR needs to get tough on it because businesses should value what PR is offering and what it's bringing to the table. And I think, as you say, it's really poor form that they're not paying on time and that the terms, you know, are terrible. And I think PR needs to get tough on that. I think they need to respect themselves a bit more to be challenging the behaviour on that. Would you agree?
I agree, but I wouldn't say respect, because I feel like they do respect themselves. I just feel like sometimes people don't want to speak out in case they like ruin their relationship between a retained client. I feel like that's a big fear as well, especially when new business, it's starting to improve, but hasn't improved on a grand scale.
Our sister podcast, Beyond the Noise, has covered this in more detail. So check out last week's edition. This week, we've got a op-ed that's coming out that's offering late payment tips, so 6 tips for getting paid on time by PR clients. So check that out. Moving on, last week, law firm Shillings announced plans to set up a comms agency, which was a bit of a surprise to a few. Shillings is known for representing clients such as celebrities like Ryan Giggs and J.K. Rowling and Meghan Markle in very high-profile cases. Shillings said the new business was being founded as a result of reputation now being made in both the court of law and the court of public opinion, and that the need to address intensified scrutiny, so digital and privacy threats, smear campaigns, complex reputational risks and overnight cancel culture, which has been supercharged by the ultra-high pace of the digital age, were all reasons. So, guys, what do you think of this crossover between legal advisory and PR?
I mean, I picked out the same comment as you about reputation now being made both in the court of law and the court of public opinion. I think that's when it really clicked for me, because we've seen with so many high profile cases, both the ones that you mentioned and others, that public discourse around them is so powerful nowadays. And often that's the only thing that people are consuming when it comes to these cases. They might not be reading the news reports. It might just be posts that they've seen from their friends about these cases and that kind of thing. So the verdict and the evidence itself almost becomes secondary to people's opinions. So there's an extra layer to consider in terms of reputation, and it makes sense for it to be intertwined with the legal approach.
Absolutely. Eliza, what do you think?
Personally, I don't think legal advisory and PR should mix, mainly because I feel like it becomes a little bit inauthentic, and I feel like it's just reputational comms, but on a larger scale. From a objective point of view, standing back, if I found out that a celebrity or someone else had hired a legal PR firm, I would think that something suspicious is going on, and I probably wouldn't trust them as much.
And in an age when trust is everything, that is interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, some of the comments that I saw online, one of them from Mark Lowe, co-founder of Third City, he also said that he thought the work would be tactical and that it sounds strategic. So I think it's hard to tell what it will look like practically at the moment, but it could divide people.
But this obviously isn't the first time that we've seen this in PR, is it? We've seen other companies. And I spoke to Deborah Scott from Denton's Global Advisors, which is a company that was founded by law firm Denton's in 2021. And I sort of asked her really how she's found things when they set their firm up. And she said it's sort of the shape of things to come, and that the world's getting more complex, creating issues for corporates and organisations that don't fit, as she said, in a neat categories like legal, financial, communications. She said as well that law firms often are like the first port of call for this type of queries and communications, adding that it's sort of like a natural pairing. So I suppose there are some that will view that, that it sort of goes hand in hand. What do you think?
Yeah, it makes sense. We're seeing integration in so many other areas that I suppose it's only a natural progression, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess it's very corporate-based and it looks at crisis management a lot as well, so that would be really interesting.
Yeah, maybe one to watch. September is not only the start of a new academic year. In the world of PR and comms, it's been the start of a new career for many. We've seen lots of job hires and moves in the past week or so. So which movers and shakers stood out for you both? Evie, do you want to start us off? Who have you spotted?
I was really intrigued by the two non-executive directors that Manifest has appointed. It's interesting as they've got these two people with completely different backgrounds. So Sarah Waddington, who's obviously former CIPR president, and Etta Davies, who's more of an Adland figure. He's currently EMEA Chief Operating Officer at Dentsu Creative. So they're sort of two really strong mentors coming into the agency with the goal of diversifying its offering, both geographically and in terms of the services that it offers. So moving more into advertising, branding and design. Manifest obviously isn't alone in this approach. Our UK editor John wrote an opinion piece earlier this year about whether pure consumer PR agencies will continue to exist. We also recently saw the hire of a CMO at W Communications. So there's a lot of this kind of thing happening, but I thought they were two really impressive names that Manifest had appointed.
And it's an interesting move, as you say, into what they're diversifying into, that they're bringing this sort of outside knowledge in, which is an interesting approach.
Yeah, and I'm sure a really effective way to do it. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Absolutely. Eliza, what about you? What stood out to you?
So MediaZoo has promoted Managing Director Giles Smith to Chief Executive as the founder stepped down from the business. And I thought this was quite interesting because in recent times, MediaZoo has restructured its management team and sold a minority stake to the Business Growth Fund. In a statement, MediaZoo said the business looks to build on its success over the past few years and continues its rapid expansion in both the UK and overseas. So it'll be really interesting to see how they grow and progress in the future.
Absolutely, one to watch. And then obviously one of our biggest stories was that Diageo and Shell, there's been lots of swapping and changing going on there. So we've had Dominic Redfern, Global Brand and Comms Director at Diageo, is leaving the company after 16 years. He's going to move to oil and gas company Shell as their Executive Vice President for Strategic Communications. And then with that, Brendan O'Grady, who's currently been Chief Comms and Marketing Officer at the Guardian Media Group, is replacing him. In a statement, Redfern said that he looks forward to joining Shell as it helps to build the net zero energy system of the future, which is going to be a big challenge for him because Shell has faced criticism over its fossil fuels and how quickly it is moving away from them. So I think it's going to be a big job for him on that one, and an interesting hire, I suppose, from Diageo. What do you guys think?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of eyes on them both for sure.
Absolutely. And be interesting what he brings to it from his knowledge at Diageo as well, because they are very different companies. But as you say, definitely one to watch. Okay, that's all for this episode. Noise in Brief goes live every 2 weeks. In the meantime, look out for our Beyond the Noise podcast next week. Thanks to Evie and Eliza, and thanks to you for listening. Goodbye.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.